and welcome to the last episode of Books and Booze. We are being brought to you once again and for the final time by Miss Master's Guide to Murder and Vengeance by Michael Paul Gonzalez. We are here with Jeremy Robert Johnson, author of Skullcrack City, which we'll be talking about, and also We Live Inside You. This is Renee. I'm still drinking rum and coke. I might drink something else that I brought in my bag of booze. If you listen to the last episode, I have a bag of booze. Jeremy, how are you doing? What are you drinking tonight?
I'm doing awesome. I had beer earlier. I had a slow ride session IPA, just kind of like a light IPA. And then now I'm having a tumbler of Bullet on the rocks. So,
nice.
Yeah, I'm doing good.
Rob, how are you doing and what are you drinking?
I'm good. I am drinking I'm still drinking my Jim Beam. I am jealous about the Bullet because I am a very big fan.
I like their bourbon. I haven't had their rye. So.
The rye is good.
Jessica.
Yeah.
How are you doing? What are you drinking?
I am doing really well, and I'm still drinking the Schlafly Coffee Stout. I actually have another beer, but this is so great. I'm not getting it.
I forgot how hard it was.
A different kind. I don't know what that meant. Go ahead.
I forgot how hard it was to do this with three hosts and a guest. This is going to get wacky. I'm almost positive.
No, it's going to be great.
All right.
We're going to party.
I want to start out. I want to start out with a quote that has been shared on Facebook, and I'm drunk and an asshole, so I can't remember who it was that shared it. So a quote from Skullcrack City, which I feel like it brought out a lot of emotions in me. So this is it. Exactly how long can you stand on a street corner showing two drug dealers your scar tissue-induced radical penis curvature? The answer is 12 seconds. After that, it feels weird. And that's Skullcrack City.
That's the whole thing. You've encapsulated it in that one line, yeah. That's the main point of the story. I think that's what it comes down to, yeah.
About 12 seconds.
Yeah.
That even seems long to me. I'm surprised about that.
Yeah, it does seem a little long.
Did you research that?
I'm not going to go dry snitching on myself for any kind of anything that happens in this book.
Good.
So,
that was the correct answer.
So you want to tell us actually a little bit more about it? It's just been out for a few days, and It seems like it's being received extremely well.
Yeah. I'm nervous. I'm just waiting for the backlash, you know, right away. People have been really kind with regards to the book, and the first couple of reviews that have come through have been just, you know, over the top, super, you know, enthusiastic reviews and stuff. So, I don't know. I have my fingers crossed. I mean, there's probably a backlash coming. I don't know, but it's been a fun couple of days just finally having it get out there and reach people. You know, it's something I've been working on for so long, and for a while it was in question whether or not it was even going to be published. You know, there was an issue with another publisher, and so just seeing it out in the world, and I got my copies today. You know, UPS brought them by my house. It's really exciting. So I'm just in that honeymoon phase with the book right now, where I'm super excited about people getting a chance to take a look at it. And Cameron Pierce's design for it just turned out outstanding. I'm just, you know, pretty happy right now. This is one of those good times. Yeah. When you're a writer, you know, the first couple of days when the book comes out is pretty damn exciting. So yeah,
I love that cover.
Having fun. Oh yeah, that cover art. That's a guy I've been wanting to get a cover from for years. I kind of have a peg list of my favorite artists just in general, you know. And that's this guy Jeff Soto, who I'd seen in Juxtapose and a couple other, you know, art magazines, and just thought to myself, oh man, that guy's crazy good. You know, I love what he's doing, and so Yeah, I'm really excited to have his work on there, and you know, I think hopefully we did right by his art, and it's representative of kind of how crazy the book is. And yeah, and Jack was just super nice to work with and enthusiastic, and it's a great cover. Yeah,
it's lovely.
Yeah, yeah, I feel like I'd get that tattooed on me. What?
Yeah, that's. I can see that actually.
Yeah,
yeah, it'd make a good one.
No, it would definitely work.
Maybe I'll do that tomorrow. No.
I was gonna say, you mean like you personally? Because that's almost weird, but fun.
You should get it on your forehead, just Manson style.
Probably not on my.
Just get right on your
I'm
forehead.
I'm very vain. I like tattoos a lot, but I'm also very vain. So
that's
chances
true.
Of any facial tattooing very low.
Oh, fine.
I know, I ruin everything.
What are we gonna do now?
So, okay, no. You have some fucking amazing blurbs from some big names on here, and I am thoroughly impressed, by the way. Are you just, like, friends with all the cool people, or how did you approach, we've got David
like
Wong,
James
Chuck Palmer,
or David.
Yeah, Jack Ketchum, John Skip, I mean,
oh.
Like.
No, I mean, my whole thing with that is just, it's always been about, like, who am I a big fan of, you know, who inspires me, and then just reaching out to them as politely as possible, you know, because some of these guys, especially, you know, the people that are New York Times bestsellers and stuff, they're getting hit with, you know, just a ridiculous amount of requests, you know, everybody wants something from them, so, you know, and I've talked to friends in the industry who just say, oh yeah, it's relentless. I get, you know, 4 blurb requests a day. And you know, after a while you start to get a little jaded about it. So I guess I mean, every single person whose name is on that book, I'm a huge fan of. So in each of those cases, I just wrote to them, you know, really sincerely and said, hey, you know, you're a big inspiration to me and I love what you do. And I've got something coming out that, I think you might, you know, dig if you take a look at it, and would you please? And I've just been, I would say, incredibly lucky. I mean, so I just felt really blessed that some of these guys were willing to take a look, because they're some of the people that directly inspired the work they're talking about. So
that is awesome.
Yeah, it's just a matter of being really polite and really appreciating, you know, them taking time out of their lives, because some of these guys, they've got, you know, they're on schedule to produce a couple different books a year and do full tours, and they're on the big circuit. So them taking a couple hours out of their life to read my book means a lot, you know.
That's awesome.
I
love you just won them over with your personality. That's great.
Well, and I just, like I said, I read all their stuff, so it was, you know, I try not to fanboy out, because, you know, somebody told me when I was really young, they were like, hey, don't be that guy who just, you know, pulls a Chris Farley show and starts fawning over a person right when you meet him or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, you remember when you wrote that book, John Dies at the End? That was awesome! You know, like, I try not to do that kind of thing, but at the same time, I end up doing it just because I'm so excited, you know, to about these guys' work and so my enthusiasm, I think, comes through, and they can tell I'm genuine and that I understand it's an imposition that I'm asking them for. And so far, yeah, people have just been incredibly kind. And I try to give that back. I try to do like a minimum of 3 or 4 kind of blurbs a year and stay open to that and try to give back to other people. But my name's not going to move units the same way for people, and I warn them. I'm like, yeah, I love the book, and I'll say something nice about it, but it's, you know, I wouldn't get the pool put in your backyard yet, you know?
Yeah. That's wonderful. When I was doing my, like, minimal amount of research for the show tonight, I looked on your blog, and I saw the blurb from David Wong, and I posted that in our little group. I said, I just watched John Dies at the End last weekend, and it was really good. So that's all I need to know
really
about
good.
The show tonight.
Oh, yeah, Wong's great, man. John Dies at the End, and you know, the Spiders follow-up are both just like they crack me up. And he the really cool thing I love about his work is it genuinely, I mean, he has a bunch of laugh out loud lines, but he finds these ways to make you uncomfortable and paranoid. Like during John Dies at the End, I kind of got the willies and I was a little scared and paranoid just walking around my house afterwards. And I was like, that is ridiculous. Like, you know, with all those absurd things that happened, like, why am I spooked right now? And I really admire that he can pull that off. So
that is
I was pretty excited. Yeah.
I feel like too, because if you're really into like the bizarre and the strange and you're into horror, chances are you've been into it like your whole life, and you hit a certain age where it takes a lot to move you. And I always Yeah, go ahead.
Definitely it takes more and more craziness, you know, as you go along. I think it did that for me through my teens and stuff, because I started reading Stephen King when I was in the, you know, when I was 5 years old or whatever. I got Cycle of the Werewolf and was, you know, super into King and Barker and McCammon and Lansdale and all that stuff. So I was just kind of and Skip and Spectre. So I was raised on that crazy stuff, and it did for me initially have to get more and more extreme. And the weird thing now is it's kind of flipped, and now I really appreciate like when writers can do either weird things or horror things in a really subtle, kind of elegant way, you know. But that's probably just me mellowing out, getting old, you know.
Renee, did you just hang up? She did. She just wrote me and said I accidentally hung up. Sorry, I heard the little thing. She'll be back, sure, it's fine. That's one of the things that I've always really enjoyed about your writing, is that it's got all these crazy elements, but it's still so very literary. It's not like I'm reading some outrageous thing that I don't even know how to say it. There's so many things out there that are just trying to shock me that you become kind of like, about it. But your writing, just the writing itself, is on a level that it's something really special to read, and it's something that you don't get every day. And that's what I appreciate and what I look forward to when I'm reading the stuff that you write. Oh,
that's super nice. Thanks.
Oh,
yeah. I went through in my early 20s, I went through a real snobby, literary-only kind of phase, you know, doing the classics because I was off at college, and the college library only had, you know, just, you know, Updike and Burroughs and all this stuff, and so, you know, I had to pretend for a long time that was the only cool stuff, and I'd go home for Christmas break and be like, oh, I gotta sneak in a couple of the new Stephen King books while I'm home, so they don't catch me at college, you know, like that total kind of uptight, like, you know, I didn't own a turtleneck, but I feel like that's a turtleneck wearing behavior, you know. So, you know, but I got over that, but I just, you know, I didn't get over kind of my interest in I guess the craft, or, you know, the just blending together the kind of different influences and stuff, you know, from my snobby era and from the pulp era and all that stuff, and just trying to make it something that presses buttons for me. So
awesome.
And then what's your what's your experience been working with Lazy Fascia so far? Because they're I love them. I think they're fantastic.
Oh yeah, I can't say enough good about them. It's just been, so far, it's been amazing, you know. And actually, Cameron Pierce, the head editor there, he had taken a look at Skullcrack just as a friend. He was gonna help me out and take a look at it before I was supposed to submit it for a deadline at the press it was set with before, which was a permuted press. And he gave me such copious notes and worked on it. I mean, like worked on it like crazy for 3-4 days. And I ended up going in probably in the last week before deadline and changing 9,000 words, like omitting whole sections, writing new chapters. You know, I really respect what he does as an editor and his instincts. When he's right, you know, when I agree with him, I respect him. So, you know, and also just Lazy Fascist. When I finally realized, like, wait a minute, I've got a book I can do something with here. He was pretty much the first guy I went to, just because, you know, he's got McClanahan and Sam Pink and Molly Tanzer and, you know, Brian Allen Carr and Stephen Graham. The number of books that he's done in the last couple of years that I absolutely love is through the roof. So I just felt really honored to be, you know, just, you know, even by association, just to be in with all those authors I really respected. And I think he's kind of on the cutting edge as far as the independent presses go. And yeah, he's been amazing. He's been working super hard on this book, even while he's in South Africa right now on a writing fellowship. You know, he's been talking to me every day, and I can't say enough good about working with him, or, you know, just his work as an editor too.
I know we've had several lazy fascist authors on the show over the last couple of years, and what I really love about the stuff that they put out and the authors that publish with them is that you get like a healthy dose of bizarro, but it's like some of the best that there is.
Mm-hmm.
And I know, like, Jessica and I have said this in the past, whereas before we were doing this podcast, we weren't really like into bizarro that much. And then after we've had so many of the authors on the show, reading all the books and like finding just these amazingly talented people, like, you know, the people you listed, or having you on the show when we did We Live Inside You, and you find these stories and you find these works that like really hit something more than, oh, this is weird,
right?
Which is ultimately the best, like when you get the best of both worlds, you get something that really moves you and also is super fucking weird and original.
I always respect
that. I think Cam's a bit. Oh, sorry. I think he's great at like his sensibility for that, for what's both weird and kind of moving and has a real emotional core to it, is pretty singular, you know. And I think that shows in his lineup for sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I never have to worry about is this going to be a book that's just weird because it's weird, or is it going to be a book that's, you know, got a lot of grammar errors that got left in there? That's never the case with Lazy Fascists. It's always very top notch with what they put out, and it's a safe bet, pretty much. If you get one with that label, it's going to be good. So that's always exciting.
It's a safe bet if you're not like easily offended or confused.
Yeah, that helps.
Yeah. I feel like when you say something is a safe bet, it feels like very safe, like normal.
I guess for our sensibilities, for my sensibilities, it is a safe bet that I'm going to be entertained and feel satisfied with what I'm getting.
Yeah, I think you're saying that it's dependably great weird shit.
Yeah. I'm not going to pick it up on the shelves of Walmart, but
oh no.
it's good. It's dependably good weird shit. That's actually perfect.
So I think that we should take a small break and listen to a voicemail, if that's cool
okay.
with everyone.
Yeah, yeah.
We're going to listen to the guy.
Crazy voicemail.
Crazy shitty beard.
And they're really
do
hard
it.
To listen to.
Sorry. Here we go.
Hey, Books and Booze. It's Jay, Slate, and Jocelyn. Just came back with a can of Milwaukee's Best Ice, which, after the taste, raises questions about how bad their ice quality is. Just wanted to say it's a shame the time is coming to an end, but thanks for providing such a great show, such a cool punk attitude, and the interwebs won't be the same without you. Peace and love. Bye.
I feel like he was really drunk on Milwaukee's Best, actually.
Was that Jace Blake Jocelyn? Is that who that was?
It was.
I was trying to make out the name at least. Yeah, it's hard to hear on that. But
the best part of that is that he said we had a punk attitude, and Google Translate turned that to Comcast unit.
Comcast unit. That's what we've got.
You guys have always had the most Comcast unit, I would say, of any of the podcasts I've ever listened to. 100%, I got a Comcast unit feel from you guys.
It's true. That's great. It's what we've been striving for. Actually, that's funny because Jay, he once said something about he really liked our production value because it sounded so like it was a garage band thing. And we're like, oh, we're just like cheap. We would sound better if we could, but thank you. I'm glad.
We'd sound better if we had money.
Yeah. We don't mean to sound this shitty, but I'm glad it's reaching people.
Right. I feel like we're a lot like Comcast in that we have terrible customer service.
I'm sorry for everyone I gave terrible customer service to. Phew. So, Skullcrack
City. I'm going to do a flashback real quick, though. Do you remember when we interviewed Jay Staten Joslin? That was terrible.
Oh, it was. Not because of him.
It wasn't. I mean, it wasn't Jay's fault. It was just, I don't know what was going on.
The line kept cutting out. Like, he kept getting dropped over and over and over. And we just had a weird, it was a bad interview.
Yeah. They happen.
We've had like two, maybe three bad interviews out of the however many we've done.
I feel like, you know how sometimes you drink more than I do?
Yeah.
When we're co-hosting together? I feel like that's why you think it's only two or three.
That's pretty funny. I'll give you that. I'm trying to be polite to our guests, who I'm sure are listening.
Look, I already said we have shitty customer service. If people are offended, we're already – the whole time we've been doing the show, when we started out, I used to joke that we were going to get hate mail because, like, whenever something terrible got said, which was often – and then we never did.
No.
I feel like this is our time to shine. This is our time to get that hate mail that
we've been
waiting for so long.
Let's talk about the guest we hated. No, I don't really want to.
No. I didn't mean like blatantly ask for hate mail. Just, you know.
Oh. I know. I always take things a step too far, apparently. So, Skullcrack City starts out in the banking world, right?
Yep.
I used to work in banking. I was a teller. That's how I'm relating to your book right now. See, it's my interview trick.
Yeah, I was a teller for 3-4 years.
Really? Me too.
Yeah, yeah. I did the whole chain. I did drive-up teller, and
yes.
I got really good at Dig Dug when I was a drive-up teller. Because I installed Dig Dug and Pac-Man on my computer, and that was awesome on the slow days. I probably am a world record holder at Dig Dug, which is, you know, important. And then I worked on the front line and worked as a vault teller for a while, and then moved over to I worked in commercial lending and mortgage lending, and did somehow just accidentally like 3 years in agricultural lending, which means I know a lot about like bull semen, you know?
That's awesome. I guess
yeah, I
got into customer service and like open accounts and stuff, but I never got into lending.
Yeah, I did that. I did new accounts. I kind of just crawled up through the ranks.
That's amazing. I got like I think it was 3 years there. It might have been four, but anyway, it's been a while now. I actually got fired because that sounds terrible. Anytime you say you're fired from a bank, people are like, oh, you stole. I really didn't.
Yeah.
there was an issue with one of the customers, and they thought that they gave him too much money, like a $100 bill too much, which was a big deal, you know. And he said they didn't, and there's nothing you can do after that point, you know. But they were going to try and do something. Like, they were going to try and trick him into it, like try and get him to admit it somehow. Because I don't know why they saw, like, Law and Order too much. And I said, because part of being a teller, you know your customers, you know, especially I'm in a super small town. And I said, you know, I really don't think he did it. I said, you should just let it go. I don't think he has the extra money. He doesn't seem like the type that would just be that way. And then I got fired after that. And they're like, oh, you're not.
Yeah, they figured out you were complicit. You were in on it with them.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, oh, man. I just, whatever. I worked at a bookstore after that. It was better.
Yeah, you made the right move.
Getting fired. I did make
yeah.
I thought it was going to be because of your shitty customer service.
No, I give amazing customer service. Seriously, the only thing I've ever been good at in life for some reason is giving customer service. I have a smile that you just can't beat. But
you're easily as good as a Comcast unit.
I am easily as good as a Comcast unit, if not marginally better.
Did Rob fall asleep? Is Rob still here?
I'm awake.
He's absolutely
Congratulations.
Well, in fairness, we just had a baby, and the baby likes to scream all the time. So I think I'm running on like 4 hours of sleep right now. But it's good.
Yeah.
I'm going to drink more, and that's going to wake me up.
Yeah, I wasn't trying to insult you. Like, oh, are you awake? I meant, like, legitimately, I was worried that maybe you had fallen asleep because I knew
I understand.
I thought you were eating brownies, so I was excited. So tell me what dessert you're having, Rob.
No, I'm afraid of getting off the couch because I actually considered, like, lying down on the couch, but I know if I do, then I'm going to legitimately fall asleep.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. Oh, we've been there. Babies, man. Again, huge jerks.
They're weird. They're irrational.
They're so far from rational. Yeah.
Yeah.
They're like hungry cave people.
Yes. 100% yes. Oh, man. I
feel like
sometimes
they don't throw that for a really long time, though. Sorry, Rob.
Sometimes I get that baby bug thing, you know, where it's like, oh, your baby's cute. I should have a baby. And I'm like, wait a minute, no. They're so bad to be around.
I love that you say that because I don't. Like, I get that way about, like, puppies. Oh, I should get a puppy, but not about babies.
I get that way about puppies, too. If I had my, like, we have 3 dogs in this house, which is an excessive number of dogs. I'm still like, we should get 5 more. And I don't know why I hate our dogs half the time. They're assholes, too, but being in the house.
My dogs are literally fighting just now outside the door, like trying to kill each other to get my attention because I'm in the office. Usually when I come in here, I leave the door open so they can lay here. Otherwise, they do crazy things like try to murder each other.
This just makes me think of how when we first had our son, we found that sometimes people were just – they were being polite. They were trying to relate, but they would talk about their difficulties with their puppies as if it was in any way comparable. And
yeah.
I was like, dude, when you want to go to sleep, you can lock that puppy in a kennel, a.k.a. a cage. If I do that, I go to jail for 10 years.
Yeah.
So I can get the back. Just so I can get one extra hour of sleep. Like, you do, it's not in any way comparable. Like, but it's a responsibility. I mean, you have to nurse. No,
no.
No. It's not the same thing
not
at
yeah.
all.
No, no.
Because when you have a newborn.
Pizza. Like, we ordered pizza for dinner tonight, and it was like a fucking shell game. Like, I'm trying to eat some pizza while she's trying to feed the baby, and then I take the baby so I can feed the baby so she can have some pizza. And, like, if a fucking puppy is crying because it's hungry, you can tell the puppy to shut the fuck up and you can eat your pizza. The baby's freaking out and wants food. You have to feed the baby. Like,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When the puppy
you
wakes
you
up at 3 a.m.
while you eat, yeah, you just
fuck
feed
that
it.
Puppy.
Yeah. Let's be real. Everybody here, listeners at home, may not understand this, but I feel like everybody here understands this. There are times when you have a newborn and you wake up in the middle of the night. And you probably would lock that baby in a cage if you didn't know that it would get you thrown in jail. Not because you don't love your kid.
My son is 6, and he's at the age now where I'm getting to start to tell him about how terrible he was when he was a baby. And it's funny, just like over dinner, I'm like, I used to cry a lot. You were so, so bad.
Oh,
and he's like, what? I'm like, oh, it's fine. Eat your food. But I know, he likes it. He thinks it's funny. Because that's how
yeah,
kids are.
You're why I drink.
I haven't had like a major breakdown. I did have one. There was one night that I think my wife was like doing something and the baby was screaming and I just started begging her. I'm like, why are you crying? Why won't you please stop? And started freaking out a little bit. But you know, for the most part, it's been not so bad.
That's good.
That's the best you can hope for. I love that.
Yeah.
The whole
right?
of the baby
exactly.
boot camp, like the first 2 to 4 months, it's like. The best you could hope for is just raw animal survival, like subsistence, enough sleep to not die or just fall over while you're standing up, you know,
yes.
you're bumping into walls. It's a massive experiment in sleep deprivation. And it's a pretty big shift, pretty much like having a
well,
puppy.
I also remember,
yeah.
I mean, when I was in college, I mean, me and my roommate we were idiots. And I would be up for like, 2 or 3 days. I think we once actually, we tried to stay up as long as we possibly could because we heard that if you stayed up for more than like 72 hours, you went insane. So we were like, well, we need to test this theory. And I think we made it to like, we nearly made it. We were both at like 60 something hours and then we both just crapped out. But like when you're in college, you can do that. And it's
right.
okay. And then the next day you're like, okay, whatever, time to go to class. And now it's like, if I don't get 8 hours of sleep, like, I want to have a breakdown. You know, like, I start getting, like, really, really angry at everyone and really,
oh,
like,
no.
upset at the world. So, like, I remember at one point I was sitting at work today and I just took a deep breath and I'm like, what fucking day is it? And my boss's assistant was like, yeah. You need a nap.
Here's the thing. When I was just out of boot camp, they do combat training. And, like, you're sleep deprived. You don't really get sleep deprived in boot camp because by law they have to let you sleep. But in combat training, I got so sleep deprived that I was hallucinating on a hike. And I literally fell asleep walking. Like,
oh, Lord.
Yeah, like, I woke up because, like, I drifted out of line, and, like, one of the sergeants was like, the hell's wrong with you? I said, oh, my God, I was asleep. that is not even comparable, because nobody was relying on me to
right.
keep him alive.
Right.
Like, at the end
yeah.
of the day, they knew that people were going to be zonked out, and they didn't trust us with live ammunition that day. You know?
Now my big moment that I remember is I had changed into clean pajamas, and the baby starts crying, and I go to change his diaper, and he pisses all over me, and I'm just like, I can't even be clean. And for some reason, it was like this huge, the world had ended because I just put on clean pajamas for once, you know. That's the moment I like to remember now, because it sounds ridiculous, but at the time it was such a big deal.
You were living like an animal.
Exactly. You couldn't even be clean.
No way to be.
It's not. It's just not.
And this conversation right here is why when people who have children ask me why I only want one child, I'm like, are you insane? Do you have memory loss? Are you okay? Do you need, like, a nap or something? Because this is terrible. Having a baby
yeah.
is terrible.
Yeah, I know that we're, like, really fresh into this, but a couple of times now, me and my wife have looked at each other and we're like, we're not doing this again. Don't anymore.
All right. There's a lot of babies in the world. You put in one. That's good.
Yeah, and my brother's got a kid, and my other brother has a kid. My daughter's going to have plenty of people to play with. I'm not worried
sure.
about that.
You've done your contribution to putting a smart, intelligent woman into the world. You're good.
Exactly.
You're canceling out some idiot's dumb child.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry for things I've said. on this show.
I feel like this is just like the natural progression that we've all been drinking for like at least an hour and a half at this point. And so now we're just like, I just want to complain about my life a little bit. Is that okay with everybody?
I want to complain about my lab irrational baby because that's the only frame of reference I currently have at the moment.
That's all you know right now, that baby. Oh, Jesus.
So let's talk a little bit more about Skullcrack City before we completely forget that we're doing an interview.
Oh, yeah.
I'm terrible at this game.
Are there any babies in Skullcrack City?
Yeah, there's, no, now that I mention it, no, there's no babies.
I think it's my first book
with no baby characters. I left out a whole demographic. I messed this one up.
Well,
no,
you're never going to be able to sell to all the babies.
I know. Well, the baby market's up and coming. They've got, like, little baby credit cards and stuff now, and they know how to use the one click to buy everything online and stuff. On your, you know, iPad. No, they're shoppers. There's accidental baby shoppers out there all the time.
If my cat accidentally bought your book, I wouldn't return it.
Thanks. That's a ringing endorsement.
You can use that as a part.
Yeah, can I?
You need to put that one on the cover, yep.
The accidental cat purchase that doesn't get returned.
About it. That sounded really mean, kind of. I'm sorry.
No, I want to put it on a book now just because I think it's brilliant. Well, it shows a certain, you put that on there, it's like, I think people would relate to it. They'd be like, yeah, you know what, if my cat did accidentally paw across my iPad and bought that book, I probably wouldn't return it. The keeper. At least check it out.
I feel like I want to talk more about our character here, our little banker, and how he wants to right the injustices of the banking world. Tell me, okay.
You know what sucks? Wait. Do you know what sucks when I didn't do? One of my favorite things that ever happened on Books and Booze is before Jeremy was on the first time, he made a list, and he posted a picture of his list of things to prepare for the interview, and it was the best interview preparation that anybody's ever done. And I didn't go look it up to remember what was on it. I just remember that one of the things on the list was that you would answer all bizarro questions in Espanol, and that you would do throat singing.
Apparently you said that.
You ran throat singing? I sang like Michael McDonald from Doobie Brothers, which is kind of throat singing. It's like lower jaw singing, you know?
That was fantastic.
No, like those things, that was what was amazing about the list, is the things on the list actually happened. They weren't just a joke that you were making.
I'm not fucking around. Yeah. I'm not going to make a list. I don't have free time for lists. These are not idle lists. I take lists seriously. I'm obsessive with my list, and I execute each one of them point by point, preferably in chronological order.
I feel you on
I
that.
Do know.
If you could see my desk and the number of lists I have on random scraps of paper, it's true.
My dog's trying to eat each other again. So.
Okay, I think
it's just like having
out.
A kid.
No.
No, but I wish we had. I'm going to look it up. I'm going to see if I can find that picture. Like,
you're never
deep in the
find
depths
it.
Of Facebook. I saw it recently, though. That's why I'm like, man, I'm going to see if I can find it. And I'm going to put it in the episode notes.
All right. Well, if there's one thing you want people to take away from this episode about your book, what would that be?
Oh,
You can say a couple things.
I don't know. Just that it exists now, and it didn't before, and I'm pretty excited about it. And I think it's good for some kicks if people want to check it out. So yeah, I mean that's I think at the core of it. But
cool.
Yeah, that it's primarily written in English. It's legible type. It's printed and bound in a book. So it's definitely a book. And I would recommend, just based on that, maybe check it out. Or if you buy a digital version, or if your cat accidentally purchases you a digital version, give it a go. At least test it out before you send it back, you know?
If cats or babies buy it for you, you know,
I'd give it a go.
They know what's best. Yeah.
It's worth your time.
Yeah, I remember you said at the top of the show that the people that you asked to blurb it, a lot of them had directly inspired or influenced the novel itself. What I think is interesting, I guess, about the book is that you have like drug use, which then warps like the perception of what is actually happening and what is in the character's head and what is reality. And so I guess I was wondering, Jessica's messaging me some really funny stuff. I'm sorry. I was wondering, when you're looking at that and looking at the people that you asked to blurb, knowing that they were influences and inspirations for you, where do you think you were drawing the most from? I have my theory, but I'd rather hear it from you.
With this book, it was a tough call. I mean, there's definitely, you know, some elements in the book that happen in the second and third acts that are definitely influenced by both, you know, kind of what David Wong has done and what Laird Barron's done. But I don't know, when I tried to give Cam an elevator pitch for the book, it was actually almost more, I'm kind of a Philistine, because it was more like I was pitching it to him as a lot of film influences. And so, I worked on it for so long that I think there's tons of my influences in there. But I told him, I was like, okay, you know, what if the ghosts of Philip K. Dick, you know, and H.P. Lovecraft were forced to watch Chinatown and Big Lebowski and Scorsese's After Hours and Mulholland Drive just like over and over again for 100 years until they went completely crazy. And then they, you know, you sat them down and made them write a book together. I told him, I was like, that's kind of the feel, the ethos of what I was going for. And he was like, dude, that's the worst elevator pitch I've ever heard in my life. That's the most convoluted anti-literary thing I've ever heard. And I said, yeah, but right? I mean, it's kind of the feeling of it. And
makes me want to read it.
So
yeah.
I guess there's tons of this one I kind of poured all my different influences into. But I would say, I mean, Wong, I would say, was definitely a big influence just in my willingness to do more kind of humorous stuff, like have lighter moments in there. You know, We Live Inside You before that was just a kind of a funeral dirge. Like, there's a couple funny things in there, but it's mostly deadly serious and really morose and really sad and destructive book. And so this time I just decided to have a little bit more fun with it. And it was freeing seeing somebody else that managed to be scary and, still have a lot of amusing and entertaining stuff in their book. So that was definitely a big one. And then, I don't know. I think all my different influences kind of, I can see the influences because I know what I stole, you know, I know what things I was ripping off and, you know, I was like, oh wait, this is where I got this. And this is where I got this. But hopefully it's such a hodgepodge and I did it kind of in my own voice that it's not transparent to everybody else. Yeah. You know?
I think that's what's awesome when you can pull it off is if the reader comes in and they pick up one or two things here and there that they recognize because they're into the same stuff that the author is into. But overall, it just feels like a cool new experience that was born of all these other cool things rather than sometimes you read a book or watch a movie and every few seconds you're like, oh, okay, well, that's a so-and-so reference.
That's
oh, okay, I get it.
Yeah.
They like Philip K. Dick.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's been one of the kind of interesting things so far with the reviews that have come out is one, people are afraid of spoiling stuff, which I never saw it as that twisty of a book, but I suppose now people mostly just describe the first act and then say they can't say any more. So
right.
I think that's kind of fun. And then just that people can't say exactly what this thing is, you know, because I just moved between all the genre elements at the time without thinking about genre because I'm just, you know, dealing with what fascinates me or repulses me. And getting that down as fast as I can in a way that's interesting, you know, that clicks for me at least. And so in doing that, I think it can get confusing though, because I wasn't worried about like, oh, you know, do I have a romance beat here, or, you know, does mm-hmm. something spooky need to pop out from behind the corner at this point, or, you know, what would satisfy those kind of genre expectations? I wasn't thinking about, but there's loads and loads of genre elements. I mean, you could definitely say there's,
yeah.
you know, this is a horror book, or it's cosmic horror, or it's crime, or it's, you know, it's super weird, bizarro stuff, or some of it's literary. I don't know. It's kind of just all the stuff I love. And I locked myself in hotels and basements for years and typed it up. So, yeah.
I love that. My husband has a word for that. Well, a phrase for that. When you take all these elements of stuff that you love and you kind of put them together, he says it's just you're writing inside jokes with yourself, basically.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
that's what that feels like. No question.
So for the second time in Books and Booze history, the first time was last week, I just bought a book while we were talking about it on the show. So that's my recommendation for Skullcrack City, is I just bought it while we were talking about it, because I was looking at the blurbs and I was going to ask you a question about the blurbs, and I was like, yeah, fuck it, like, I'm sold. I want to buy this book.
Be honest, your cat bought it and now you can't decide what to do with it.
Now
her
like,
cat
well,
bought it. She's embarrassed. She decided to make the best of the situation.
I see in the blurbs, like, so many, and even each individual blurb, but especially when you take them in all together, like, so many different elements. Derangement, original, insane, fun, literature. Like, there's a lot of words that you don't usually see, like, being just, like, flung around together. And when I see somebody going on and on about how, like, fucking insane a book is, and then I see someone say, which in this case is Jack Ketchum, whose opinion I respect, this is entertainment and literature. And that's, like, oh, fuck it, I'm sold. Plus, like, Jack Ketchum tells you to do something, you do it. So I'm going to buy it. I mean, I did. It's been delivered.
No, thanks.
That was so scary.
Look. There's a reason why we don't normally do two shows in one night, and it's all of this that's happening right now.
It's challenging. It is really challenging to keep drinking for that sustained period of time, especially were you guys reminiscing on the last episode?
We were.
Yeah.
Oh, that doubles the drinks. The moment you go into nostalgia town, talking about the olden times, man, the drinks just disappear.
I'm really proud of myself because I kind of had a bad day today on top of this being the last episode, and I was a little bit afraid that I'd have, like, one too many drinks and start crying. But it didn't happen.
Oh, Jesus.
So.
That makes for a great show. People love that. A little hitch. And, oh, man, the drama of it, the real emotion, you know, people would be out there listening, you know, find themselves
a few minutes left.
Catching a little bit.
Yeah, I don't wanna cry about it.
No, I don't think, you know what, I mean, when I think about it, I just think you guys put a lot of energy into doing a wonderful show. You got the word out about a ton of independent books and authors, and you also drank a lot of booze, and I feel like all you did was put energy into virtuous things for a long time, and I think that's commendable, and I think it's awesome, man.
Man, now I'm gonna cry.
No, you're not.
He's like, now I'm going to make it happen.
No,
I'm
happy.
We have two more voicemails and not very much time left.
Oh, shit.
I don't want to do that.
Yeah, let's do it.
We're going to play them all and then, yeah. So.
Wait, I gotta leave you guys my voicemail real quick. I gotta
okay.
end this with another parlor trick. Okay, so here's the world's worst Jimmy Stewart impersonation, leaving a message for Books and Booze. Okay.
Okay.
Hey guys, what's going on? This is Jimmy Stewart. How are you doing today? I've always needed your message just to say, Books and Booze, what a show, zappy, compel, blinded. This is Jimmy Stewart saying bye-bye.
close, right? Like a little eerie, like kind of like you're in the room with him.
Oh god,
yeah, like it's not quite, but it's almost. Yeah, no, you got it. Take that on the road.
Oh, for the second time tonight, I feel like I can't breathe. Oh, that was so good.
Okay.
That's also my Bill Cosby, by the way. And I don't do the Cosby anymore. It's just kind of people aren't into it.
You don't get to do that one anymore, yeah.
No, nobody wants it.
No, you can't.
Nobody wants to hear
you
talk
about that one. Yeah, everyone's just uncomfortable. Everyone's like,
just like, oh.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Okay, here's one from Gordon Island.
Oh.
That's according to Google transcribing. He's Gordon Island.
That's Majihai.
Yo, you up? I only didn't get home for a few more hours, so thought maybe if you wanted to come over and, oh, it's not that kind of call. This is Gordon Highland. I was one of your earliest guests on the show, and I also enjoyed partying down with you guys over a couple of memorable weekends in St. Louis and, Louisville. St. Louis and Louisville. 120-some-odd episodes. It's probably about twice as many books as I read during that time, and you guys keeping PBR and Blue Moon in business all that while, it's quite an accomplishment. So, hey, it's been fun. Thanks for having me on and hanging out with me. And best of luck in wherever your alcoholic literary adventures next take you.
You know what? Keeping PBR and Blue Moon in business, which is just, that's just Jessica.
That is me.
That's just you.
I want to take this moment to be real serious, even though I'm going to giggle about it. I have made so many goddamn friends doing this, like real friends.
Yeah.
That it's just ridiculous. Like, Gordon is my real, real friend.
And he's an awesome guy.
He's so great. He's so great. And I consider him a real friend. God, like more people than I can even list. Real friends. Sean and I were talking today.
Don't start listing people, because then people.
No, that's listing everyone. But yeah, we were talking about it, because the Powerball is like $500 million, which we did not buy a ticket for, by the way. But the cash payout would be like $300 million or something. I was like, we were gonna give like $100,000 to so many people that I've just met through Books and Booths. But you're not getting it because we didn't buy a ticket. Anyway.
Damn it.
Yeah, like, and like Molly Panzer, I go to her for like vegan cooking advice. It's so great. I just love you people. You're so wonderful. God damn it. Okay.
My favorite Gordon Highland memory, not counting the time that I was really drunk the first night in St. Louis and I put my hand on his knee. Did I realize it? And then I realized it. I was like, oh, I'm really sorry. And he's like, it's fine. I figured that. You didn't know. And I was like, I didn't. No,
that's
but my
hilarious.
Favorite
yep.
Gordon Highland memory, aside from that, was that when we all, as grown-ass adults, went to the zoo, St. Louis Zoo, completely hungover, sweating booze out of our pores, and we had the best time ever. 20 minutes into it, we're all arguing over what animal we want to see next, like a bunch of five-year-olds. No, I want to see the zebra. It was amazing.
It was awesome. I took Gordon's picture next to a giraffe, I think. It was good. Good time. Okay. The nostalgia again.
The nostalgia.
And I'm
gonna
get a huge garbage bag of booze.
Shopping bag. Like a plastic shopping bag. It's not a garbage bag.
Renee told us before she started the first show that we recorded that she brought a bag of booze in with her. What would you think it was, guys?
That sounds like
bag.
A trash bag.
Immediately.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
With
thank
nitrate
you.
In it. Yeah.
100%.
You guys have to understand, though, I'm actually, like, super lightweight. So even though I do a show that's all about, like, booze, this
what's
is like my
the-
one or two drinks.
Huh? What some of you don't realize is that Renee Pickup in real life is only 3 feet tall.
No, I noticed that when we hung out.
She is so short, guys.
How short is she?
She is like 3 feet
two.
Tall.
I am almost 5'2".
Almost.
No.
Almost. That's why she has such a powerful personality.
That's right. I have a lot to make up for. You spend so many years having to reach literally for things, you start reaching figuratively. And then you become awesomely successful, which is what we're going to call where I'm at in my life. New definition of awesomely successful right here, right now.
Oh, me.
Oh, yeah. So, one more voicemail.
Oh, so, Elizabeth, are we in the show now?
We are really close on time, but we do have one more voicemail. So hold on.
Okay. Let's do it.
Hello, Renee. Hello, Jessica. This is Kit Powell. I am currently at work. I am sneaking off early to send you this message. So when this gets played and inevitably you reach superstardom and this gets spread all over the internet and goes viral, I will be fired and lose my job. So thank you for getting me fired. I'm going to miss you guys. It was a really good show. I really enjoyed myself. It was the best podcast I've ever been on. It was also the only podcast I've ever been on. And I'm really disappointed I'm not going to get to come back, because I really feel like we had more things to say about why Johnny Rotten may be the greatest living Englishman, the immediate superiority of Hellraiser 2 over Hellraiser 1, and, you know, obviously, most importantly, the fact that The Exorcist 3 is a better movie than The Exorcist, and we're never going to get to have that conversation, and I feel sad about that. So I wish you guys well. I want to thank you for being so gentle with me as I lost my podcast, Cherry, and I hope you have a fantastic final show. And I'm sure I'll irritate you on Facebook in the near future. Cheers, guys.
Hellraiser 1 and 2. Ah, good for him. I liked
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
That was like one of your last shows,
felt like,
right?
I kind of felt like I was being, like, seduced in a British pub just then. Like, I have no idea what that person was saying, but he's got a pretty sexy voice.
He was purposely trying to agitate me is what he was doing by talking about Johnny Rotten and saying that The Exorcist 3 was better than The Exorcist, which is fucking ridiculous.
I heard literally none of that.
Well,
yeah, I didn't hear
it
either.
When I edit it into the podcast later, and Sal Paul was there.
I'm glad he was on there, because he's an example of a person I didn't know who he was, like, in the slightest before he came on the show. And then he came on the show, and he is wonderful. Like, he is a delightful guy. I loved talking to him. I would love to talk to him again in the future. So excited that I got the chance to quote unquote.
I have his phone number, thanks to Google Voice.
There you go.
And how freaky it is. I have his phone number.
We're just
going to
start calling people after the show.
You're going to call Skit and go,
Seven days.
What Jeremy wasn't here for is right before you called in, we were explaining how Jessica drunk dialed me like 5 minutes after a show once to the ring me.
Yeah, so I could do the ring for 7 days. I didn't drunk dial you necessarily. I mean, I prank called you.
While you were drunk.
While I was drunk. I feel like there's a distinction there. He said, it's important. I'd enjoyed it. Aww.
So, Jeremy, is there any chance we can get more singing?
One more?
Oh, dude.
One more time.
All right, pick a song. Pick a song.
Pick a song? Oh, no, I wasn't prepared.
Oh, my God, that's too much pressure.
Bro,
I should write to pick a song. That spirit in the sky.
What'd you say?
Did you even hear that?
No.
No.
What'd you say?
Spirit in the sky. I got excited.
Spirit in the sky.
Okay.
Am I the only one who knows that song?
I'm going to sing Spirit in the Sky in the vocal stylings of Jimmy Stewart.
Yes.
Spirit in the sky. Here's the spirit in the sky. Pretty precise. Pretty precise. I'm sure lyrically, 100%.
Yeah.
Vocally, maybe 110%.
Yeah.
Yeah. No.
I feel like
it's
nailed it.
That was by far the best.
It was like 95% certain I would end the show in tears. Did not think it would be tears of laughter.
You weren't moved? I thought you. Oh, well, I did that one wrong. I didn't nail that song, I guess.
That was
supposed to be very poignant. Very poignant. Oh, well. C'est la vie, right?
Right.
Can't win them all.
Jeremy, I'm so glad that you got to be our last guest. Our ultimate guest.
Yeah, it's an honor. Thanks for having me.
I wish that we were focused enough to talk more about your book. I feel like that would have been nicer for everyone.
I feel like you represented you well, though.
Yeah, thanks. Hey, you gave me anytime you mention my book exists, that's kind. So, no worries.
It's cool. Renee bought it, so you got a sale out of it.
Boom.
Exactly.
Yeah.
At least one person bought your book because of this show.
Outstanding. I nailed it.
You did.
It's a Books and Booze bump.
You'll never do better. You were maybe on
That's my slogan. That's my personal motto. It makes everything so easy.
Oh,
you aspire to nothing. It's great.
You may have been on bigger podcasts, but eh.
You'll never do better.
Oh, boy.
So, yeah, I mean, the sponsor is Miss Massacre's Guide to Murder and Vengeance. We just talked about it like an hour ago.
Yes.
But technically, this is a new episode. So, Miss Massacre's Guide to Murder and Vengeance by Michael Paul Gonzalez. Fantastic book. One of the favorites that we've read while doing the podcast. Jessica and I both love it desperately. I'm super tripping out because this is the last time we're going to close the Books and Booze, so it's weird, and I do feel emotional. Thanks for coming back for the final episode, Jessica. It was super great.
Yeah, thank you for letting me come back, I guess.
My dog would also like to thank you for coming.
I appreciate your dog being here for our last
Oh,
moment.
My God. I feel like maybe somebody is robbing my house right now.
Later and say weird things.
Yeah. You have the Google voice number. You guys can call and leave me weird voicemails.
Well, there you go.
That goes for everybody listening, technically, because it's totally public and everybody has it now. It seemed like such a good idea at the time. Terrible idea now that I'm saying it out loud.
Okay.
So, yeah. Go out and buy Skullcrack City. Buy Miss Massacre's Guide to Murder and Vengeance. Read them both. Enjoy them. Leave them 5-star reviews on Amazon. Music. I'm not sure. Hold on. I know that it's by a band called Meth Thief, because you don't forget a band name like that. I Was Wrong by Meth Thief.
Meth Thief.
Meth Thief by our lovely music supervisor, Danielle Mignona. And like I said earlier in the last episode, technically, Rob and I will be back in the spring at Out of the Gutter Online doing Gutter Spite. Danielle will also be our music supervisor for that. So at the very least, you'll have on-theme music. I think it'll be a great podcast, too. Jessica, watch out for her movie in the fall.
Yeah.
Called Frances Stein. Go by New York. Go by the comic book I'm going to do. And then, when you're done with all that, go by Skullcrack City again.
And then tell your cat about it.
Yeah, and then have your cat.
Please tell your cat. If I don't get this cat market, I'm dead in the water.
Yeah. No, cats love Jeremy Robert Johnson. That is clinically proven.
I can't even touch cats. My face swells shut. This is hot. This is awful. hypocrisy to me courting a market that's bound to kill me if they actually like me.
Oh God.
I mean, I can't breathe. I'm gonna have to get one of those EpiPens if I get a big cat demographic.
You can be like the boy in a bubble.
Yeah.
Right? So when you
it sounds like a miserable existence.
I'm
in a bubble followed around by
cats. You have those separate.
Yeah.
Separate but equal to cats.
Oh shit.
I've never gone wrong.
Separate but equal.
Because it's never gone wrong.
Oh my.
When people have done that. Okay. So, to all our former guests and friends of the show and people who've been listening and maybe even people who only listened once for this episode, I don't know why. You're behind the times. Thanks for a great 2.5 years.
Cool for you.
Yeah. No, but for real, thanks for a great 2.5 years, because it has been great. Nobody else wants to say anything. Is that?
Is it over?
It's over.
I didn't want to screw up your ending.
No,
by babbling over you. It is over, right?
You could also say thank you if you wanted to.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Too late now.
Oh, we fucked it up.
Shit. We've been relying on you to speak for us for so long.
Everything's been ruined.
I think it's because I jinxed him at the beginning and called him Dakota, and now he was like, I guess I'll be him.
I guess I'll participate like Dakota did. I'm leaving that derisive comment about Dakota in.
Good.
Why not? It's our last show. Jeremy, once again, thank you. I'm hoping.
Yeah, thank you guys. And Rob, good luck getting some sleep, man.
Thank
you.
For real, though.
You'll get there. It's a long road, man. But you'll eventually get like 7 hours of sleep in a row, and it's gonna be amazing.
It will.
One
actually,
day.
You'll wake up terrified that your baby is like something.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's true. But no.
I never said.